Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to Dr. Podcast. Oh. We're on the air. I am beside myself welcoming Tom Sizemore into the studio. The book is By Some Miracle I Made It Out of There, a memoir with Anna David as the contributing writer. At Tom Sizemore is the Twitter handle. And Tom is looking around admiring the Corolla Empire.
I like it.
It's crazy. I want to get right into this. Before you and I start talking, I want to put somebody you know on the air with you. Mystery caller, introduce yourself to Mr. Sizemore.
Sizemore, you may remember me from such places as Sober House when you went bananas on Heidi Fleiss, and I was like, oh my God, he's so amazing when he's that angry.
Were you there?
She was a cast member.
Oh. Why can't I remember?
Oh.
Because she sounds different now.
She sounds totally different.
Yeah, it's Jenny Ketchum.
Hi, Sizemore.
Really?
Yeah, she's now lives in Washington. She's going to graduate school for a social work degree.
I catch him.
How sober are you now? How long has it been?
It's been a year and a half. I was sober from the time that we met for a year and a half. Then I decided I wasn't an alcoholic; that I was just prostituting myself and had a cocaine problem. And then it turned out that I was indeed an alcoholic. And then
what? Huh? I mean, cocaine addicts are alcoholics too? What?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I know. All the same thing at the end of the day.
So you were doing coke and thinking you weren't.
She could drink a little
cool.
bit.
I'm cool. I can drink a little bit, but I can't just
right.
do
you know
the
how that works. It's...
Yeah, I just can't do blow or prostitute.
Both those things sound really not so good. You're right.
Yeah,
well,
right?
Jenny, just wanted to give you a chance to say hi to Tom. I'm going to spend some time with him. And again, thank you for having
me. You thought I was attractive, though, when I was angry? I didn't think so. I wish I had
Tom,
never done
I loved
that.
It, but I think it was just because I had never. Like, I couldn't feel anything, so to see somebody feel, like, something so well, I was so impressed.
I was angry. I was really angry at myself, Mike. Yeah. But it was a tough time.
It's
a lot better now.
He is a lot
better now. Good to hear.
But, Jenny, I just want to say
congratulations on your year and a half.
Yeah, well done, my dear. We'll talk soon, okay?
Bye, guys.
You take care.
Bye.
Let's start with that night, because that was a very strange experience for you and me. Well, you got PO'd about something, and you were very fragile back then, but for the grace of God happened is I had a bad feeling and drove over there that night. Do you remember this?
Yeah, you didn't even know why.
I had no idea. Well, I could hear it in Jennifer's voice. Something wasn't right, and I went over there and saw people jumping over the side of the balcony. I thought, oh, I got to get in there.
I shouldn't have done that. I mean, Heidi had been riding me. I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's fine now. We speak once in a while. And I was just kind of like, I came into celebrity rehab, you know, I think it was like 5 to 6 days late. And then there was the 2 week break. And I was kind of like waking up right around that period. Because in celebrity rehab, I never really was really that cogent.
I was cogent.
I was seriously sick.
Yeah.
And,
remember what bothered you?
I just was kind of waking up to the disaster. To the situation I was in, which was a real, real bad one. I mean,
in your
I had
life.
To start over again from the very beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to get clean, and then that was just the beginning. I mean, I remember thinking these thoughts there, like getting clean is one thing, but it's going to be the hardest thing, but then that's just the beginning.
Well, this is the part that people miss in recovery is that you have to change everything. You got to start over.
I know.
And people don't want to do that.
I've been having a tough time just recently. Mm. After the book came out, was a real big high for me.
Yeah.
I was proud of it. But now it's over. I mean, the you know, the thrust of the excitement. Of
the tour and all that stuff.
All that stuff.
Going on Stern.
Yeah. Going all that, doing all that stuff, and doing Dr. Phil and all that stuff, which was really exciting. And was everybody really liked the book, and I made it 4 years, and I got to make it another 4 years. It's all I kind of came up with. Why I'm down is it never stops. The problems that are pre-existing in me to do things like that, take drugs, are still there, and I got to keep my eye on them. And it's just a natural thing to go through an exciting period and then have a kind of fallow period when it's over.
Yeah.
And I don't have a partner. I'm single, and I've been single virtually 4 years. And, you know, I got a relationship with my kids now, and that's going not as fast as I would like, I mean, with regard to my having them with me.
Is that because your ex-wife? Or
not my ex-wife. It was the baby's mother. Is she
holding you back? Or is
no,
it?
it's not really worth getting into.
It's complicated.
It's a tough situation. And, you know, being sober is not the panacea to all my problems.
It's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
And, people get pissed and upset when they're not, like, happy in their sobriety. That's why we avoid the pink cloud.
Right.
Because there's this painful shit that comes in life, and your disease goes, well, fuck that. We ought to just go use.
I don't feel like that. I just get depressed. I have several little – I didn't watch Celebrity Rehab when it first came out, but I have downloaded several little parts of it from my computer for me, mm-hmm. and I watch them. And I just don't want to be like that. I mean,
it's a reminder.
Oh, it was bad.
I know, dude. I was there. I
was bad. I looked dead.
We thought you were going to die. Bob and I, we were just desperate to do something with you. We thought you were going to die. Once we got our hands on you, because we knew when we got our hands on you, you did well. We always knew that. It's when you got away from us that things didn't go so good.
I mean, the depths of denial I was in when I came into the hospital the first time and said I wanted to go home and say goodbye to my kids. I'm lying about that.
Your brain's not working right. Yeah.
Way not right.
Yeah.
Like, where did I think I was going? What did I think was going to happen? I don't really know. I don't know what I was thinking. And I ignored my taxes. I ignored all these things that I'm having to deal with now. And it's, you know, it's taking care of the debris from our past has been daunting to me. But I'm doing it. It's just harder than like almost anything that's hard in life. It's worth doing, but it's harder than I thought.
It feels like you're a little alone right now. You need to connect with people, huh?
Yeah.
You do that. You isolate. I know you.
I'm not isolating right now.
But you do that.
I'm telling everybody in the world right now. I'm not feeling so good.
Good. Good. That's good. That's good. Are people reaching out to you and trying to help? And I got to hook you and Bob.
Yeah. People are. I'm the one who has to return.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like tennis, you know.
That's what I'm saying. You have a tendency to kind of pull back a little bit when you're not feeling good.
It's like after 4 years, it's really much. Look, my life's changed immeasurably.
Yeah, it's better.
But I guess I thought it would be even better. You know, maybe that's what I'm going through right
now.
Was
the book a disappointment?
No. It just was so exciting, and then it was over.
Then it's just reality.
like when I first did started doing plays, you do a musical, and you get really close to everybody in the summer stock, and then it's August 27th, and everybody's got to go back to their hometown.
Yes.
And go back to school.
That coming and going is hard.
Yeah, that I really liked being in New York again. I lived there for a long time and doing all those shows there. I felt youthful again. Well,
how long were you there for?
I was there. I was there. I don't know, 9-10 days. Mm. But you know, I moved there when I was 23. I'm not 23 anymore. I'm 51.
Are you sleeping okay?
Can you believe that? I'm sleeping really well.
Yeah.
Oh, when you're 51, you start to sleep well. I'm asleep before it says 1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm a little older than you. It's all right. I know what you're talking about.
You look better than me, though. Not really.
Not really.
You're in better shape, that's for sure.
Right, I don't look better than you. And let me. I want to share something with you that I'm dying to say, which is that you and Robert Downey. When I talk to you guys, and whenever I talk about your recovery, I have this crazy feeling. I worry about you. I worry about your recovery, and I worry about you as a person. But then I have this over here, this part of me that goes, the world cannot be deprived of this talent. We want it too. Do you feel that? Do you know what that is? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I can feel it towards Robert. I mean,
no, you're the same.
I mean, but I.
You feel a charge, Robert.
I don't want to deprive myself from the work. I mean,
I'm sure not. But the world doesn't want to be deprived of your work. And your, so your recovery, we all have a stake, weirdly, in your recovery. It's very strange.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I feel that way towards Downey.
Yeah.
If he were to fall, after all this magnificent success and this, for him, this long-term sobriety, it would be a blow to everybody. I mean, especially him, but it'd be a blow to people.
Let me put it differently.
He's Iron Man and Sherlock Holmes.
What if he went, oh my God, all the success is starting to threaten my sobriety. I need to stop acting. Forget using. I just need to stop acting to protect my sobriety. He will have deprived everybody for his own. And I would feel really like, well, Jesus, you got to do
that.
That's
the thing
he's got
to do, though.
Right.
He'd have to do it.
He'd have to, yeah.
Because without the.
I think being willing to do that is what's necessary.
I'd be willing to do it.
Right.
Because if I'm not sober, I don't.
That's the point.
Everything is. I can't even tell you what it gets like. You know what it gets like.
Yeah, I've seen
it. It would get like that again in a month and a half. I would be right back in that kind of physical place. I just can't. It's too daunting to even think about it. Just to think about it.
Good. Don't. Let's leave it alone.
Getting drugs, just getting them, the people you have to get them from, the places you have to go, the lies you have to tell, the bizarre sweating you do when it's you're in there. It's just too much, man. And look, I'm 51 years old. It just wouldn't be very dignified if I was going to dinner with, say, I had a date, and I went, oh, excuse me, honey, I have to run upstairs and grab my pipe.
Hang on one second.
No, not my wallet, my pipe. I had to get my it would be a very dignified thing. You're going to the White House. Let's say I get in a big movie. It's going to the White House. And you go, oh, tell the chief of staff of Mr. President Obama that I got to find a pipe in this town. An oil burner? Does he know where I could find one? It's not very dignified at 51, does it?
No, it's not too cool. But speaking of big things, can you talk about this film you're working on right now?
It's a movie at Fox. It's called it's about SEAL Team 8, and I go to Johannesburg on Monday, and I play Commander Hicks, who's in charge of this operation, and it's a cool movie. And
is it going to be about the Obama thing?
No. So it's just a fiction.
I mean the Osama thing. Yeah.
No. Thank God that's over, huh?
Yeah. Do you want to laugh about your using? Because I know you like joking about stuff, or is it too?
Oh, I can laugh about my using. My using was bizarre. My using was bad.
Well, because it was bad. Two things. One,
I think
what was humorous?
Bad.
What was it? Well, the pink dot episode was humorous. Remember that with Bob?
Oh yeah, that was humorous. The pink dot. I jumped out of a moving vehicle and hid in the pink dot employee bathroom for a day and a half. Come on, man. That's funny. That's off the charts.
But that's great.
I went in there
to hide out from Bob Forrest.
One of the nicest guys on earth. You don't have to hide out from him. He's usually a guy you don't have to hide out from. I said, I want an iPod. And he said, Tom, you're going to treatment. I'll get you an iPod when we get there. I said, but I want one now. And he went, well, we're going to be there any minute. And I went, no, I mean now. And then I opened the door and jumped out of a moving vehicle.
And ran away.
And I went into the pink dot and I said, they said, Tom. And I went, you got to hide me. They're looking for me. They put me in the employee bathroom. And then I convinced them to let me live there for a day and a half. Finally, the manager came in there after like 36 hours and said, you need to go back to where you came from.
Mr. Sizemore.
That's outrageous, isn't it?
It's so human.
That's pushing it to the limit here.
No, it is. You did what
at
you
least
do.
My using, but when I was on your show, when I was using in general terms, whether I was a camera on me or not, there wasn't much mystery to what I was doing.
No, you go to the mat. You go all the way. You actually scared the shit out of us. Not were we scared that you were going to die. We were afraid of that. Bob and I used to talk about you because people may not be aware. We worked with you well before.
In 1997.
Yeah, and we were really – we talked about you all the time. We didn't know we were going to see you on Celebrity Rehab, all the things, but we were always worried about you, always talked about you. And because we knew how intense your disease got. But when we came to your house –
It was bad, Drew.
I know. Listen.
It was never stopped.
Yeah.
I never took a break. It just never stopped.
It was never enough
eventually. And it just took me to the worst places I've ever been with the worst people. It was scary.
It's hope to die, drug addiction.
I think Bob thought the police were going to kill me. He thought I was too smart to OD.
Well, there was this is what I was going to tell you. There was a point which we started getting fearful that you were going to get like erratic and violent. And there was a moment, I don't know if you remember, we came into your bedroom and you were back in the bathroom.
Yeah.
We both simultaneously had a fantasy that you were going to throw open the door with a shotgun. We both backed out of the room. We didn't say a word. We backed out of the room together.
I've never owned a firearm, but I understand.
It was just a fantasy.
Because the evening before, or 2 evenings before, you came over and I had a baseball bat and I was hitting a – I was told Bob I was working on my swing and I was hitting a boxing thing, you know, unboxing the heavy bags.
Yeah, heavy bag, yeah.
The whole time he was there, and he said, yeah. "Hey Tom, you want to not do that for a minute so we can talk about this thing, your recovery."
Oh, it just the intensity of what was going on was just created fantasies in our own head that we didn't, you know. But it was weird that we had the same fantasy at the same time without talking. Isn't that funny?
Yes, well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And Celebrity Rehab was so intense.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
Yeah.
That was an intense group, and we've lost three of them. And I can't tell you that I would be lying if I said I was surprised.
I know Mike is always a heartbreak.
That didn't have to happen.
I agree.
That was one that did not have to happen.
Well,
if he'd have had some education or if he had made one phone call, because he was very...
Oh, no. Do you know what happened? Have I ever told you what happened?
I've never really heard what happened.
May I tell you?
Yeah.
He was doing great.
I saw him.
He had like 9 months of sobriety in his belt. And he comes to Bob one day and he goes... moving to Utah. We were like, whoa, Mike, whoa, dude, come on, please. No. I've got a band. I'm living at Cirque Lodge, sober living. I got this plan. I got structure. I got a sober community I'm connecting to. It's all good. And we immediately just like, oh, please, Bob. And
Mike, do you think, before you continue, do you think he was planning to do something or do you think that he was authentically excited?
I think he's authentically excited, but it didn't feel right. Something was wrong. And I don't think he was aware of it in any real way. But this is going to kill you when I tell you what did happen because I knew it kills me. I got a knot in my chest when I think about it. He called me and he goes, I'm having back pain. And I go, Mike, whatever you do, do not go to a doctor. You fucking know exactly what's going to happen when you go to a doctor and complain about back pain. They're going to give you painkillers and it's game on then. You know that's what – but my back. I didn't know he had already been to the doctor at that point, turned out. 2 weeks later, he was dead. Pills, all the pills at his bedside.
He just died from Vicodins and...
Well, he'd been sober so long. He just took a whole bunch of it. And
that just killed him?
That's how my patients die now, Tom. They die on pills. Wow. Yeah, and that's sad. It's so sad.
Mike, that's really... I mean, I really cried about that when I was... I mean, I became really good friends with Mike. I mean, it's just...
Sweet man.
And, you know, everyone thought he was a lost cause, and he wasn't a lost cause because we both saw him those 9 months. He looked handsome. He lost weight. He was optimistic. He made sense. He was.
Hey, listen, my peers did him in. How do you think I feel about that? You know what I mean? This is the medical system. It breaks my heart.
Doctors don't realize it. I mean, this investigation is going on in Orange County about this one doctor who has like 5 dead patients now. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
From pain medicine. Why this guy hasn't had his license at least suspended while they completely...
Well, there's a world out there that goes, the patient's complained of pain. Who are we to say?
Well, they just treat
symptoms. They don't understand addiction.
No, they don't understand addiction. I mean, Mindy McCready, that situation, you don't want to talk about.
I'm getting upset, but I'll talk about it. I mean, we're both getting upset. Mindy was a beautiful, lovely girl, right?
But yes, she was that. I thought when I was there that there was a big, huge part of her that she was concealing.
Yeah.
Because she was like Little Miss Sunshine. It just wasn't right.
Right.
It didn't feel right.
That's right.
That she was, there was just some part of her, a whole part of her personality that she wasn't revealing to us. And when that incident happened with Carrie Ann, then it just kind of opened up a... For the first time, I knew there was something else going on. I'd like to say I was surprised by what happened in that situation.
When she died.
But I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't because after I found out about with Carrie Ann, what happened when she went to her house, I looked up into her past. And, you know, she's had a troubled relationship life from the very beginning of her life with intimacy with men. Mm-hmm. From, I think, age of 15 or 16 with a very famous retired pitcher. And all of relationships were abusive. and there was alcohol and drugs involved that she just didn't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a – Mindy had this – Mindy was one of these people that you could tell – I could tell at a certain point, this is the kind of woman that ends up in with the police about – in jail. It just goes so far as there's the violence involved that it will involve the authorities. And when he – the fiancé killed himself –
mm-hmm.
I thought that was very strange.
Yeah.
And then a month later, she kills herself.
He was a...
Did he kill himself?
Yeah. As near as I can tell. He was bipolar and stopped taking his meds and became sort of sexually compulsive. She started getting furious with that and didn't understand what she was
dealing
with.
Were you talking to her then?
No. Talked to her after the fact. I talked to her after he died when friends were calling me saying, would you please talk to her? I'd be happy to talk to her. I hadn't talked to her in forever. And she said, and I helped her make sense of what had happened, okay? Because she was blaming herself for all of it, that he was sexually addicted because she wasn't good enough, and she made him kill himself. I said, look, he was diagnosed bipolar. He didn't take his meds, she describes extreme mania. The guy became completely manic, and manic bipolars more likely to kill themselves when they're manic than when they're depressed.
She had her own. I mean, I talked to Carrie Ann that night. She did it, and what. What blew my mind, and still blows my mind, is that she had to think about it, decide it's the best idea, all the preparation to do something like dying of a drug overdose is one thing.
Yeah,
it's usually an accident.
Yes,
Mike Starrs was an accident.
Yeah,
Joey Kovars was an accident.
Yep,
but didn't surprise me at all. Hers was an act of self destruction that you can't recover from.
Right. I mean, and it's different than addiction. It was mental illness.
It's
right.
A mental illness. Right. That, like, as bad as it got for me, I may have wished I were dead. I think I did probably wish that at times. And I did make a half-ass attempt to kill myself. But I didn't really. And I didn't ever really want to die.
Yeah.
And it just, it's not. Just I just can't conceive of doing that. I mean, I don't have it in me.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what happened with her. So maybe help you kind of deal with this. So I talked to her. I think I talked to her just once. And I said, you know, she was. She was so depressed. It was like palpable. I mean, she was so depressed. I mean, and people get that depressed. They can't tolerate the pain. And they start thinking about getting away from the pain by killing themselves. Can you kind of appreciate
that? That kind
of
depression pain?
Yeah, that incredible pain. Like she was, ugh. So I tried to make her realize this was not her fault, but that she had to take care of herself. She was scared shitless of going to the hospital that people would find out. People are going to think I'm crazy, blah, blah, blah. Talked her into going. Talked to the family. They organized some places that looked really good. I said, it looks great. Get her in. They got her in. She left like 12 hours later. They let her go home knowing this profoundly depressed person with known firearms in the home. They let her go home. And she went home because guess what? The press was writing about the fact that she was now in a hospital. They like that.
That's what made her go.
I don't know for sure that's what made her go, but that's probably what made her go, yeah. And she, you know, could talk a good game. The family who I talked to afterwards was just so pissed that they let her go. Because they got her in finally.
Who let her go? A doctor?
Yeah, somebody. She's yeah. Somebody bought her bullshit, and you know, she's gone 12 hours later. Yeah. So.
You know, I went on a lot of shows after that happened about what happens in rehab.
Yeah.
You know, you give the same prescription to everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of being an addictionologist is that you're going to lose people. You're going to lose a lot of people. You're only going to get 1% pretty much that are successful. I mean, I'm defying all the odds here by being sober and talking to you.
Yeah.
And the prescription is the same for everybody. It's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's getting involved in the program. It's getting a sponsor. It's getting a commitment. It's going to meetings. It's working the steps. It's staying involved.
Every day.
And that's it.
Yeah. And maybe maybe some structure. Maybe to live
after 4 years of being – it's not as hard as it's – but that is all that – you impart to us. You also you bring your personality and your caring and all these other qualities. Well,
and we assess the psychiatric stuff.
Yeah,
too,
and you and Bob got a great you're great people, but she got the same prescription I got.
Oh yeah,
I mean everybody gets the same prescription, and it's just like a prescription. Like you write, okay, like here's the prescription for dealing with your addiction and alcoholism, and then you tear it off and you hand it to us.
The way I feel like it's like that's actually right. The way I feel like it's like okay, I've done the surgery. And the surgery, everything's stable now. here's your prescription.
That's the inpatient recovery part.
Yeah,
the surgery's
complete.
Stabilize the person.
Surgery's complete. Your heart valve's been changed, and now you can safely
move
on.
Here's the medication you need to take
with what you need to do every day. Yeah.
And if you don't do it, I mean, you can't do it for them.
No, I can't. I wish I could.
No doctors can do it for them. If you could, you would, and everyone would be better.
That's the frustrating part. And people, not only do we wish we could, people expect that we can.
This is what gets me about recovery. If it were announced. That if you had cancer and you went to a treatment center for 90 days.
30 days.
30 days. Yeah. And after those 30 days, you had to attend a meeting a day and work these 12 steps with a sponsor.
That'll make you feel better.
That your cancer will go into remission and you will live a full life. Don't you know that 100% of the cancer patients in the world would be in a recovery center the next morning,
and you'd be asking me to airlift you to that first 30 days.
and people just don't, who have addiction, and I was one of them, did not think that it was a lethal disease. It was a fatal disease, like cancer is a fatal disease.
But I understand when you're deep in it, you can't, you don't have insight. Your disease is clouding your judgment. But it's once we get you out and going again, that's where it gets frustrating. It's like just please, just every day, just do it. Just do it. We're here for you. Just do it. And when people know, they have insight, they don't, not so deeply in denial, that's when it gets frustrating.
You know what helped me was the denial part. After a year of being sober, I felt like hell. I couldn't do but 7 push-ups. I used to be able to do 85 push-ups. And when you talk about taking responsibility for, I wanted to be angry about everything. Mm. But it was the only reason I was in this spot. I'm talking about just my physical life. Had been degraded was because of what I'd done. And there's this personal responsibility thing that's really difficult because it was so avoidable. I didn't have to do it. I mean, this is the thing I deal with the most now. Not regret, but that I didn't have to do this. I knew better a long time ago. I really didn't have to put all these drugs in my body. And it took away some very, very important years of my life as a man, as a parent, as an actor, as a citizen. And I was the only reason that it was going on. If I had decided, if I'd called my mother and said, I'm done with these drugs, help me go somewhere, call Dr. Drew, whatever you have to do, and I'll stand on my head for 2 years until this shit is over with, I could have avoided so much pain and avoided so many things I'm dealing with now, and I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because I didn't want to. That's all I can come up with. I wasn't ready to do it.
Fair enough.
It seemed too daunting a task.
Can you go the next step and be grateful that you're here now?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I can't even imagine.
Feel the gratitude. Forget, I can't imagine. Can you feel grateful that in spite of all that, and you're resentful and you're angry and you're pissed, still be grateful?
Yes, I am. I mean, when I was in there.
Work on it.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I have a lot of nice things in my life now. I look nice, and I looked so bad. I just wasn't I wasn't who I am.
You had a real if you remember, do you remember the thing that was most troubling to you in those early months?
I thought I'd hurt my brain.
Yeah, your memory problems. You were really upset about that. You were reciting Iago, though, from Othello.
Yeah, but I couldn't remember what I did 5 minutes before.
Right.
I asked you if my brain had turned into a dry country road.
Right.
And you said, I can almost, with almost complete assurance, assure you that your brain has not turned into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that.
And it came back.
Yeah.
It comes back. It comes back slow, though.
Yeah.
It comes back slow. I wish you were still doing the show. I think that show was really important.
I think so, too. It's just so hard for me. It's so emotional. It's so intense for me.
And I thought the celebrity rehab part of it was important. I know you did a season with just people.
Yeah.
The celebrities made people watch.
I agree.
That's the reason it was important. It was a really good idea because a lot of people don't realize that addiction is a disease and that the people suffering from it don't deserve to be punished. They need to be treated. And by having celebrities, then you're able to reach out to a larger base of people who will watch them because they are celebrities and then get that education.
Yeah.
Because even now in 2013, and I'm very well versed in recovery, I travel and I find people that just think it's an act of will and it's a flaw in your nature and you're just not a very good, you have something wrong with your moral fiber. There's something, you know, just not.
You're weak.
yeah, you're weak and you're a criminal. There is that the feeling out there.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I met somebody recently when I was in San Antonio, and I said, how much money did you spend on all that bullshit? This is a sophisticated guy, too. And I said, what bullshit? He said, those 14 rehabs, I read your book that you said you went to. I said, oh, gosh, I can't do the math right off my head, but I'd say like $500,000 or $400,000, $300,000, I don't know, a lot. I went to Promises 3 times. It was $52,000. That was waste time. I mean, that was waste money because I didn't want to get sober. But he said, oh, I could have cured you.
Oh, no.
I could have cured you for a quarter. What would you have done? And he said, I'd have knocked your ass in the head and taken you and tied you up in a room until you were better. And I said, that's not how it really works.
No.
And he said, oh, I just don't know about all this bullshit. You know, this 12 steps. No, look, I can tell you these 12 steps work. The hardest thing is to keep doing them.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. Because I treat everybody nicely. I went through a period just recently where I was really shitty to everybody. Because I still get bitter. Mm. You know? Bitter. And the only person I'm really angry at in the end is myself.
Yeah.
I'm really just angry at myself. I just should have stopped it so much earlier. That's what I've been going through lately. The book really brought home to me that I did not need to endure the things I endured if I had.
But
if one different thing had
the
happened.
The fact is.
I know. Go ahead, tell me.
The fact is you did. That's the fact.
The facts are that I didn't.
And the miracle is you got sober and slept in rehab. I mean, who knew that was going to happen? You know what I mean? That's so crazy.
Well, you know what? I thought the television part was going to be a nightmare, but it turned out to be good for me in my psyche because.
No, I think it does that for everybody.
Want to go out into the world after it was on TV and look like a drug addict anymore.
That's right. Here's the experience people have. I want to be done with my shame. I want to divulge it to everybody. B, once I've done this, I don't want to fail because I want people to think that I failed. And C, I get to look at what it was and it's saying it's not good. I don't want to go back there.
And my being an actor, how I look, I mean, if I'm using speed the way I was using speed, I looked a certain way. I don't look like that way. I don't look that way now. So, I mean, it helped me. It helped me even though.
You said you download and look at it and go, oh, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, and I don't. And so it keeps me away from doing that to myself again. I mean, and I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't have moments where I wanted to not use, but change the way I feel.
Check out, yeah.
Just change the way I feel.
Yeah.
Just feel different, feel better. And that's why the book tour really was exciting.
I really changed how you felt.
I really liked it. I thought the book was really honest. And that's what I tried to get across was I just wanted to be truly honest about what had happened, and I wanted to maintain my voice, and Anna David was able to do that. And I really thought it was what we set out to do, we did. And
she's an excellent writer.
She is good. She's a difficult person.
How dare you? She's a friend of mine.
She's a friend of mine.
But she, she would tell you,
if I'm a difficult person, you should talk to Tom for a year and a half.
Her being difficult.
She's also an extremely patient person,
right? Between
she
you
was
two.
An extremely patient person because for a year and a half we did.
It's funny. All right, the book is called "By Some Miracle I Made It Out of There," a memoir. Anna David is the co-author that he wrote. She was up here on episode 29. I talked to her about her life and stuff. All right, Tom, I'm going to take a quick break. Be right back.
Okay.
Hey everyone, it's me, Allison Rosen. I wanted to tell you about an exciting format change on Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. On Mondays, I sit down with guests like YouTube superstar Shane Dawson, or Mad Men's Kevin Rahm, or Bob Saget, or conservative pundit Mary Catherine Hamm. And then on Thursdays, I sit down with my coworkers Gary, Matt, and Chris, and we answer your questions and get into arguments about important stuff like whether purple Skittles are disgusting, which I think they are. Join in the fun Mondays and Thursdays. Subscribe to Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
Back with the great Tom Sizemore. Again, at Tom Sizemore is the
You hear
Twitter
that, Anna David?
Anna, he's great. You know that. You know, she
complained to you about me, I'm sure.
Not complain, but not she. Well, she would kind of sometimes.
He's impossible, Drew. He's just impossible.
She would say something like that to me, but then go, "But I love him. He's so amazing. He's so great." You know,
you liar.
No.
So he's impossible.
No. I'm not lying. We would talk about how great you are, and he would start with, "Oh, I'm so frustrated, Tom." And I go, "But it's great, right? Yes, it's fantastic. It's so fun."
Every conversation I had about her is that she's so impossible. She's just completely impossible. She stormed out of our meetings several times, like
talented.
she was like two little bankhead.
She wanted to be
I'm
here.
Out of here.
She
I'm
wanted to
out
be
out
here when
here.
You and I talk. I'm not entirely sure. I think just to be a part of this, but we failed. I'm sorry, Dana. We didn't get you in here with this. I'll bring her back. Is it okay if I bring her back?
I have to come back with her.
Okay, fair enough. Get this book. If
have you read it?
I've not read it yet.
Yeah,
I will read it.
It's harrowing.
I bet it will upset me. It, just talking to you upsets me because we share a lot of experiences together, and it. When Jenny Ketchum's book, I read her book. I was all upset afterwards. I was upset. It's hard for me. It's like watching, like I said, my kid's diary or something. It's very disturbing to me.
The thing that bothers me the most about that whole time is Mike. I just can't believe it. Mm-hmm. It just makes me so sad. Mm-hmm. I just really liked him. And I mean, it didn't have to happen. I mean, as bad as a drug addict as he was, I was right there with him. I wasn't any. People think he was maybe worse than me, but he wasn't. He just looked maybe a little bit worse. And the drug seeking of the Suboxone, which he had more of an opiate addiction than
yeah,
me, made him look maybe, I don't know.
Well, it was
the way people perceived him, all of you people who watched the show, the way you saw Mike Starr on Celebrity Rehab and Sober House was not the Mike Starr that both Drew and I got to know was 9 months sober.
Yeah.
Right before he unfortunately passed away, he became a completely different person, and he was a wonderful person, and didn't have a mean bone in his body. And I just
no, sweet person.
It's the thing that bothers me the most about thinking about that period is what happened to Mike. You know, he was only 44. Isn't it sad?
Yes, it's sad. It's not fair.
And it happens every day. People are dying of drug addiction every day.
See, Tom, I flip it and I start get angry. I get sad and they get angry because it didn't have to happen.
I mean, these drugs are bad news. I got to tell you, drugs are bad news. Anyone out there, any drug that alters the way you feel, be it a Xanax or marijuana, people would argue with me about that, but that's how I feel. Alcohol or the harder narcotics, they are anathema. You never do them. There's nothing there, but you have to stop or you ruin your life. That's it. That's from my experience with drugs and everyone else I know who's experienced drugs, as an addict, that's what ends up happening. You don't read about any really old junkies, you know.
You're not like
being an asset to the community.
Well, you're also not like to live out of your 40s if you're really a junkie. You're just not likely if you don't get recovery going. You're not likely about 40s.
You don't, do you?
Mm-hmm. Not typically. I mean, it happens, but not typically.
Anyway, this is a downer. We're getting ourselves really down here.
You know,
how about this? How about this? I'm sober and I'm doing movies again and I'm healthy.
And well, now that we all get to partake of your talent, which I appreciate. I appreciate you sharing it with the world because
I haven't lost anything off my fastball.
Good.
I can still do it. That was another concern I had was I going to be as facile?
As an actor.
Yeah, because things happen when you're acting with other actors that are good. They do little things that are different, and if you're not – because before I got sober, I did a couple things when I was – and I know I miss things. I don't miss them now. I'm as with it as I always was, and even more importantly to me, I still am as interested and as curious to act and to the whole idea of acting. You know, life isn't rehearsed. Being entertaining, finding out who the guy is, making it believable at the same time, you know, the audience can't know that – you know the lines already, and all these things that you know an actor has to deal with, and then the kicker is to be entertaining. That I still get a kick out of it, and it really is truly fun for me to do. And I did make one really good choice as a young adult, and that was to be an actor, and I was fortunate enough to become one. And despite all these problems I've had, Hollywood has been kind enough, and the world kind enough to give me a second chance at life, and for that I'm very, very grateful.
How's Judy, your mom?
Oh, she's different. She's a different person now.
I bet.
We should call her. She'd trip out. She's a totally different person. She's a different person.
Should we call her? Do you want to call? We this no.
We can't call my mom.
I've been calling moms on this show lately.
Oh, my mom. My mom would be really funny right now.
All right, yeah. We'll get her. Yeah,
I want to make sure she is to be okay to be on something that's publicly.
She's in such a good mood.
He's going to give
just that I'm sober.
I know. Listen, I had many conversations with her.
She doesn't really care. My mom's a mom. She doesn't really care if I even work again. I don't think she just wants me sober and alive.
I know that. I know that. Did she ever go to Al-Anon ever?
No. Ah, she said Al-Anon. She said that watching your show was Al-Anon enough for her.
Anything but Al-Anon. I begged her to go.
My whole family's better for it.
When one person, when the identified person gets better, everyone thrives as well. It's interesting.
You know, people say that you only hurt yourself when you're doing drugs. But I got to tell you, I went through it, and I took my whole family on a real terrible ride. It impacted everybody.
You know, Mike Catherwood, the guy I do this love line with at night, and he always says it's being the addict is when you're in it is not as painful as being the one that loves the addict, because that's when it's so difficult for the people. You love somebody who's destroying themselves; very painful.
And they're your son, and you can't get him to stop. I mean, I think about it now, how she must have felt, and the first child, and I just can't. I know why I understand her. How she was.
Yeah, of course.
The profound worry.
But it works against your disease. I was trying to pull her out of that stuff.
Yeah, because it made me feel bad.
That's right. It makes you want to avoid and go use some more.
Yeah, what's that about?
That's how it works. That's how this stupid thing works. That's why we're pulling
the family. So we're feeling like hell, and then so we talk to somebody or a situation, and we feel more like hell. So we go use some drugs that made us feel like hell in the first place to forget about the hell that we just felt together.
You know, one thing that happens with addiction is you develop something called hypofrontality.
We're never having fun. It's way gone.
But these parts of your brain here in the front.
They remember that, right?
No. The back, the deep part remembers the fun. But the frontal part where you have judgment, the ability to predict future and understand consequences, it shuts down. Particularly stimulants shut it down. So you literally – all you're operating from is this primitive center, just going do that again.
You're dealing from the right, the second,
You can't see, you can't actually predict.
No consequences.
You can't see it. It's just not part of your brain's not working. Like where you say, where was I going when I was going to go visit my twins? That part of your brain that would know that kind of thing was actually shut off.
Well, I almost blew myself up that night. Don't you know? Do you remember the gas was on in the house?
No.
And Will, I walked in the house and then Will ran to kicked the door down in the bathroom and said, the gas is on. Don't light that. You don't remember that?
You were going to light the
gas? No. I wasn't.
Oh, you're going to light a pipe?
Yes.
Oh my God. Maybe he was bullshitting you just a way to get you.
No,
to stop.
It smelled like gas. But I thought I opened up the bathroom window and I thought, I'll just do it like this, and the gas won't blow up.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it would have blown up or not. We didn't light it.
Thank God. No answer at your mom's apparently. So we'll have to.
She'll be disappointed.
I'll bring her back. I'll bring you back. We'll do another with Judy.
Are we doing, Drew? Is this a podcast?
It's a podcast. We just sit. I just sit and chat. That's why.
I've never done one.
Well, let me ask you this: how was Stern when you did that?
Howard's always he's good. He's funny. I mean, he's really smart. But he gets me to talk about things sometimes I wish I didn't.
Well, that's his deal.
I didn't want to talk about Mark Anthony so much, and I don't feel as strongly as I said I felt about Mark Anthony. For God's sakes, I mean, come on, he's a really good singer. We had a bad moment on a set, and that's it. But he kind of he knows how to salt those wounds and get you to keep talking about it. But when all is said and done, he truly wants me to get sober.
Oh, sure.
Stay sober.
Oh, sure.
He wants me to reclaim my life. He's a good man.
He is a good guy, yeah.
He's a really good guy.
Brilliant interviewer, but a good guy.
Brilliant interviewer. He got a really beautiful mind. And a lot of that stuff he does is just for entertainment purposes. Yeah. He's a faithful husband.
Yes.
A good father.
Yes.
He has all those things.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know
as he said to me, he's a good Jew. Top of everything else.
Deeply into therapy. His therapy is profound. And I can see how it affects him.
He's been into it for a long time.
Yeah, he's really. He's
self-examining himself all the time.
You can see how it affects him.
He's a brilliant guy.
I know.
The more I've gotten to know him, the more I realize how brilliant he really is.
Me too.
And he doesn't forget anything.
Yeah. This is your first podcast. Well, thank you for being your first podcast on my mind. I appreciate it.
Dr. Phil. Oh, thank you, Dr. Drew. It's great to be here.
How was Phil?
I find you, Dr. Phil and Howard, all to be really just special guys, really are able to be entertaining and keep your audience here talking about real tough stuff for people. And that's a real talent. And when you were just my doctor, your concern and your I could tell you so badly wanted me to get better. That helped me get better.
Good. That's good. That means a lot to me.
It's true. I could tell that you wanted everybody to get better, but I could, you know, it meant a lot to me. Your warmth and your good, you just got a certain goodness, Drew, and all those guys do. Phil has a goodness to him that I don't know him well like I know you, but he had a goodness to him that really.
Well, it's nice to hear.
It was cool.
You had a special effect on me and Bob. I can't even tell you why, but I just, you know, I'm telling you, we talked about you all the time. Way long after we had you at Las Encinas and then long before, we did not know we were going to see you again.
I want to tell you something I'm proud of, is that of all your patients that you've ever had, I imagine I'm in the top 5% of the bad ones. And I got sober.
Yeah.
And I'm a public figure, so it works. I'm a walking, talking advertisement for it working.
Well, and hopefully it will affect other people that they'll lower their threshold to go.
And I know that, and that also helps me stay clean.
Good. That's good. Do you feel it as a burden ever?
No.
No.
Uh-uh.
Hmm.
No.
Because really, ultimately, it's not about other people. It's about you staying clean. You got to stay with that.
Oh, I know
which
that.
Which is hard enough.
Yeah, I know. I would love to meet somebody. Anybody out there single?
I'm sure.
not newly sober, like 3.5 years of sobriety.
Right.
Unmarried, unhitched.
You deserve a relationship. It'll rock you a little bit. It's hard in sobriety.
You know, you don't pick when you have one. Like, I would like to have one now, so I won't have one. Like, I'm ready to. Well, I mean, I'm putting it out there that I want to have one.
Now, you're going to be touring. You're going to be out filming for how long?
Oh, just a couple weeks. Just a couple weeks. Just a couple weeks.
Let me work on this a little bit. I can be a matchmaker. Let me see what I can come up with.
She's got to be a good person.
Good.
Got to be. Got to be a good person that doesn't use drugs at all.
Yeah,
a sober person's better because a normal person doesn't get it.
Yeah, a normie might get it. Normie with someone in their family, maybe, or something.
Well, Robert's wife is a normie. I've not met her. I've heard so many great things about her, but she's a big part of all the great things that have happened with him. Isn't it great what Donnie's done?
Oh, my God.
Well, because it's been a long time now, but when you think back to 1999.
Oh, I was there.
It was bad.
Yeah.
He got caught with a gun. He got caught sleeping in someone's house.
No, he was you and he.
It was bad news. And I went and saw him in prison, and it was bad. I would be lying to you if I told you I thought that he would be Iron Man and have this magnificent success that he's having now back in 2000 when I went to see him at Corcoran State Prison. And I just think, Robert, if you're listening or anything, just congratulations. It's just a job well done and wonderful.
You should get back in touch with him.
Well, we talk once in a while, but he's really busy. He's a big, giant movie star again.
No, that's right, I know. But he's a...
This guy couldn't get insured.
No, I know. I used to work...
I know you did.
I never was his doctor or anything, but we used to talk and stuff. And I used to... forget what I used to have him on. But he was always... He's different than people think he is too. But he's just lovely.
He's a lovely person.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was that made him finally stop it, but I never thought he would. I never thought Robert would get sober. I'm sure people didn't think I would either, but I didn't.
You know
think
what
he
it
would.
Was for him? You know what it was? I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I think he would say this is true. It was his willingness to give up everything for his sobriety, including his career, including acting, including everything. He just put it all on the tray and went, I don't know if I get any of it back, but right now I don't get any of it. All I get is my sobriety.
Really?
And then he took back what he wanted slowly as his sobriety took hold. I think that was it. I really do.
Really?
At least that's how I experienced it with him. I wasn't that deeply involved.
Because he did disappear for like 2 or 3 years after that final arrest.
Listen, and then it was all bets were off at that point. He did not know if he was going to work ever again.
He didn't, did he?
Mm-mm.
He was doing the herbs and trying to exercise.
He just focused on staying sober. And then lo and behold, when you focus on that, lo and behold, everything else starts happening.
That's great. It's just great.
That's what I see for you. That's what I pray for you. Because again, and this is very selfish. We benefit. We the public.
I so badly want to be in A-list movies again, and I will be if I stay sober. I know I will be.
Well, don't even.
If I don't stay sober, I won't.
Yeah, you don't have to even worry about that because if you stay sober, you will be. I think that's the way Robert thought about it.
And that's how I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because things are, you know, just the level of things that I'm being considered for is that A-list stuff. 3 years ago, I could not get there.
Are you kidding?
No.
No, how could anybody get you out of the house?
Because you have to win. I have to win people's trust.
They'd have to sit there and watch you swing a baseball bat.
Stop it. But I have to win back people's trust one person at a time.
Yeah.
And I accept that.
Yeah.
It doesn't when people ask me to read, or people ask me to come in and they want to talk to me, or people ask me to take a urine test, and people, there's no hoop they can't. I can get through them all. I may not like them, but I'm past that too. It's like I understand it, because would I hire someone who had all the problems I had? Okay, so-and-so says he's sober, so-and-so says he's sober, he behaved well here, bobbity-bobbity-bop, he passed those drug tests. Well, now it's 9 months later. Now he has to do it all over again for me.
Yeah, that's right. And that's how they should look at it.
That's the way it works until a certain point, who knows when it is, and in an indeterminate future, then they go, okay, he's better.
I hope they still do that to Robert. I hope they still are circumspect and make him keep structure around him. I hope they do. Otherwise,
they should.
Success can be a real problem if you're in sobriety. It can be a real problem. Got to be careful. I want you to tell one story to this group, this audience, and then we got to wrap it up. It's that crazy story when you were in New York and you know what story I'm talking about?
No.
This is a great one. I think it's your story. God damn it, I'm blocking on the actor who did the Tribeca Film Festival, The Godfather.
De Niro?
De Niro, the De Niro story.
Which one? Where you came to, get
where
me?
You came to get to the trailer and then you dove into that car. Tell the story. Okay. It's a great story. Do you mind?
No.
It's such a great story.
Okay. I had spoken to him. He'd come to my mother, flown in, and he came to my house, and I'd agreed to go to rehab. Okay. I'm in front of my shrink, my mom, and Mr. De Niro.
Now, what was De Niro doing there? Why did he show up?
Because my mother asked him to.
And
we were doing heat.
And you had already sort of eluded him.
I already told him I had a problem.
Because he came
to the bathroom, and there was blood all over the place.
And what did he say? Because this is what part was found interesting. You told me, he said, like, Tom, I know what this is. You know, it's like.
He said, you know, I know what you're doing. And I went, I'm not doing anything you're not doing. That's what I said to him. He said, well, last night I went to Ago and I had this and that and the other thing. And I went to bed at 9:30. What did you do? We don't have anything in common. And he said, you're shooting heroin, whatever. It was bad news. And so then I agreed to go to rehab, and then I did the final shot of heat, and I was supposed to go from that shot to his trailer where my mom was, and I was going to be driven to the airport and flown to Tucson, Arizona, to go to Sierra Tucson. I convinced my assistant to pull the car up to the corner of Figueroa and Fifth or something, and I said, after Pacino kills me, before they take that thing off my forehead, when I get up and I hand them my weapon, I'm running to the car. Do you understand me, Glenn? And he went, what do you mean you're running to the car? I said, I'm running to the car. It's a convertible, right? So I have a top down, and I'm going to dive into the back seat. And as soon as I make contact with the car, drive. So they do the shot, and it's in the movie, too. And I get killed, and I fall down. What happened after we cut was this maniac actor and myself got up, and they wanted to take the thing off my forehead. The
exploding devices?
Yeah. And I said, oh, that's okay. I handed my gun, and I went, and I started running. People, Michael Mann, are just looking at me in this peculiar way as I ran past them. And then I dive in the air like Superman, and this black Mustang peels out.
There goes
so Bob. I could go. So I went to the Lowe's Hotel and checked in under Emil Gooch. So I could get high for four more days. Finally, I got caught at Shutters by Bob.
It's better than the pink dot. By Bob
the
Forrest?
Least, no, by Bob De Niro. Bob De Niro. He went there and he said, I don't care what name he says. He says, hey, look, I'm looking for Tom Sizemore. You know who he is. So we don't have a Tom Sizemore. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I have on good authority that he's here. So they said he's under the name Emil Gooch. And he said, oh, B or 10B. And then there's a knock at the door. And I figure, oh, it's drug dealer, hooker, or food. So I just opened the door, and it was him. And he said, you can either go to prison or go to rehab, Emil. And he said, you can't hang out the window. You're on the 10th floor. You've got to come with me.
Is this in the book?
Yeah.
Stories like this. The book is, by some miracle, I made it out of there, a memoir. Get that book. Let's take a – Tom, let's see. Let's take maybe a quick call here.
Okay.
And then we'll – let's try this one. This is Josh. Josh, what's going on?
Hi. How are you doing, Dr. Drew?
Good. Thanks. You're on with Tom Sizemore.
Hey.
What's up?
Hi, Josh.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm so glad that you're doing good, man. I've watched many of your movies. I've watched you for 10 years, you know, since Heat and all that. You're doing a good job, man. Stay on the straight and narrow.
Thank you. I will. Thank you very much. Appreciate the kind words.
I'll pray for you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So what's up, Josh?
Okay. Dr. Drew, it started out, I'm 30 years old. It started out when I was 19. I've done almost every substance under the sun, but I got caught by the Oxycontin buzz. And I continued down that road until it went to the heroin, and then started taking methadone on the streets and went to a methadone clinic.
All right, what do you want to do, Josh?
What drugs is he on now?
Methadone.
Basically, they've taken my take-homes because of THC in my system, and I don't have a ride there. And I'm on 125 milligrams. I was wondering what your, I was going to ask you.
Ask me what?
What you think I should go?
I think you should go into treatment.
Rehab.
Yeah, go somewhere into treatment for an extended period of time. Our friend Mike Starr, we were talking about, was a methadone user, and that's what, and then the pills are what killed him. This is serious business. Methadone withdrawal takes a few days, maybe even a few weeks to kick in. When it is awful, especially from as high as 125 milligrams. You need to – you will get, really sick. So you need to be somewhere.
It took me 9 months to quit doing that in 1997.
Methadone?
Yeah.
I didn't know you had a methadone history. That stuff is – oof.
It's terrible. You need to get yourself into treatment is what you need to do, Josh.
Yeah,
there's
please,
no
Josh.
Other way off it.
Yes, there's no way. You just got to, and you got to be instructed for an extended period of time. It's not. There's no shortcut with this kind of using, and it's so dangerous. Oh, Tom, I've got like a toothache in my stomach.
You have a toothache?
In my gut from talking about Mike and Mindy.
We never really talked about it.
You and I?
Yeah.
I know.
And everyone wanted to say that, all those pundits after the third one, after Mindy. People want to, you know what I mean? They were being somewhat negative about
the show. Well,
it's
one of the reasons I didn't want to. I mean, people are trying to get me to do it again, and I'm just like, I don't know.
I would understand why you wouldn't want to with what happened, and then all the nace, he didn't. I mean, what didn't you do? I mean, right. what were people thinking that you could have done? When she didn't even tell you that she had these issues, and you're a doctor, and she's not the only patient you have.
She's not my patient. I hadn't seen her in 4 years. She was my patient briefly, and then she
terminated. I forgot about that. And also, it was 4 years later.
Yeah, she terminated her care.
4 years later is an eternity.
Yes. Yes, I'm available to her. That's why I called her when she asked.
You're always available. I've called you several times, and you get back to people.
Yeah,
she was just she had enormous issues. You know who's doing well is Carrie Ann.
No kidding.
Yeah, she is doing well.
That's great.
She's got a baby.
I knew that. Here's the thing about Carrie Ann. It was really interesting. Everybody saw a certain version of her on TV, and there was a part in Sober House where I was treating her very kindly, and we had a really nice exchange, and people were like, why were you so nice to her? And I thought, why was I so nice to her? Because she was so difficult. I thought, when she was off meth, she was a great patient.
Yeah,
never saw her off meth.
The thing about her, the way you can tell if she's using, she's mean.
She gets horrible, yeah.
Simple.
She's a completely different person using.
She is the meanest bitch on earth if she's using.
I know.
Give me a cigarette, you idiot. I mean, she's the meanest person.
Yes.
Like she was to Jen.
Yes,
she's like that to everybody.
But she is not like
Jen
that.
Should know that.
No, Jen knows. But she is not like that at
no,
all.
No, she's not using.
And it's striking how different she is. And it's easy to be kind to her then, because she's
a sweet girl. She's a sweet girl.
I agree with you.
She's a good mother.
Good.
She had a beautiful baby.
I'm glad to hear
Preston,
that.
Preston, his name is. He's beautiful.
I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. There's another one. I mean, it's all this stuff. People, how could you put up with that? It's like there's another side to it. There's a reason somebody's behaving like that. There's a reason Tom spends 2 days at Pink Dot. He's not because it's Tom. Tom is not Tom when he's living at Pink Dot.
No, I would never have picked it as an apartment. And when he asked me to leave, I fought him on it. I was like, come on, another day. Come on, I'll pay you.
Is Bob still out there? Bob camped out in one of the tents? Tom,
I need another pipe.
I love you, man. I really do love you, and I miss you. And don't be a stranger. Hang around with me.
I'll come back
somewhere.
On the show. Get out of David. Let's come on.
I'll get Bob. We'll hang out.
And, that'd be great.
You mean Bob? I'll get some coffee or something.
That'd be great.
It's time.
That'd be great. Yeah.
All right. Great. All right. Tom Sizemore, and we'll bring Judy in next time.
Yeah, we'll bring Judy in.
Bring
him
up.
All right.
The book is by some miracle I made it out of there. A memoir. Get it. Read it. It's on the website. See you next time.
But don't do it.
Don't do it.
This is Corolla Digital.